Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. We're so glad to have you with us here this evening on Ask Herbal Health Expert Susan Weed, a two-hour radio show each Tuesday night. Herbal medicine is people's medicine, simple, safe, effective. Please bring your curiosity and health questions. Susan will enlighten, surprise, and delight you. I know most of you know Susan Weed already. She's my mom, so I know her. But for those of you who have not yet met Susan, I'd like to share. She is the author of the Wise Woman Herbal series, five wonderful books on women's health and herbal medicine, including Wise Woman Herbal for the Childbearing Year, Breast Cancer, Breast Health! The Wise Woman Way, Healing Wise, The Wise Woman Herbal, New Menopausal Years, The Wise Woman Way, and Susan's latest book, Down There, Sexual and Reproductive Health, The Wise Woman Way. In addition to being the editor at Ash Tree Publishing and writing her books, Susan is the director of the Wise Woman Center in Woodstock, New York. The Wise Woman Center is open to the public on appointment-only basis. She offers weekend workshops, intensives, and apprenticeships throughout the season. Susan is also available to you online via wisewomanmentor.com. There you can go and view her weekly e-zine. You can subscribe to receive a notification via email each week, or you could join her mentorship program. Susan also offers distance learning correspondence courses and online courses at the Wise Woman University. But you can also just go to her website, susanweed.com, where you will find thousands of pages online with recipes, articles, art features, and so much more. Well, for now, let's see what Susan has to share with us this evening. Thank you, and welcome, Susan.
Hi, thank you so much, Justine. I'm always so thrilled to be introduced by you. And how are you today, Rebecca?
I'm doing well. Just got done with all of my chores.
Okay, how's your garden growing?
What's that?
How's your garden growing?
It's growing well. We've been having some intermittent rain over the last couple of days, and all the plants are really enjoying it.
We just got the first squash from our CSA. They were so surprised to have it so early for us.
Oh, wow. Yeah, mine are flowering right now. I don't have any yet, but
yeah,
I've been seeing squash at the market.
Our squash really took off, and look at that. It's ready to eat. Here you go, gang. And we said, woohoo, yes. Give
That's
us
awesome.
Squash. We are happy to eat squash.
Yeah,
and then one of my friends said, ooh, I don't know, it's so slimy. And I said, wait, you must think eggplant. She said, what? I said, would you boil an eggplant? She said, oh, no, that would be terrible. I said, right. Well, you don't boil a zucchini either. It would be just as terrible as boiling an eggplant. She said, oh. I said, yeah, just cook your zucchini like you cook eggplant. And she called me up and she said, oh, zucchini is wonderful. I said, mm-hmm. So while we're chatting about vegetables, do we have a caller waiting?
Yes, we have three callers waiting right now. So.
All right. Well, I guess we better start answering their questions, huh?
All right. Great.
Okay.
In the 310 area code.
Hello?
Hello there in the 310 area code. Come in, come waiting for you.
Zeroing in for a landing. Hello. Hi, Susan.
Hello.
This is Jean-Marie. Hi.
Hi, Jean-Marie.
Wonderful to hear your voice.
And yours, so, too.
Thank you. And I'm happy to hear about the rains and the squash and the happy vegetables and everything.
All right.
Well, I have a question for you because I've been thinking a lot about the inflammation that has come to visit me since my menopausal years really kicked in.
Uh-huh.
And what's that all about? And what are some good herbs? And what are some of the best nourishing herbal infusions to deal with this new inflammation that has come to visit?
Well, tell me about the inflammation because I'm a little unclear as to what you're talking about.
Okay. Well, I'll describe in a little more detail. Actually,
okay.
At one point it was a bowel issue, which, you know, taking using motherwort on a regular basis seems to really help with that kind of inflammation, along with, of course, diet, food, you know, making sure you're keeping your inflammation down that way. But I'm still experiencing a lot of skin inflammation periodically. I'll just notice, like, around my eyes, especially when I'm close to menstruation, my skin will get a little bumpy almost. It's not just like acne, although I have some of that too. But it's some kind of an inflammation.
I'm a little unclear as to how this is inflammation.
Okay, because I mean, I guess I just look at it and it looks inflamed to me.
I hear that your eyes are swollen.
Are they
red?
No, and they're not. It's more that it's just like little. It'll be like bumps, like near the tear ducts, like almost like around the eyes, or up on the forehead. I guess I should have been more specific about that. And then they'll go down within a day.
To me, flame means hot and red.
Okay.
Inflame means area that is hot and red. Inflammation means there is heat and there is redness and generally dryness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
what you are describing
right to
me does not match any of that so far as I can tell, but perhaps it's my difficulty in hearing what you're saying.
It might be my difficulty in explaining. Sometimes there is redness or flushing, but I think you're right. More describing, they're like, well, let's call them bumps. They're bumpy, you know, and they can go down within a 24-hour period.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you said that you're in your menopausal years,
mm-hmm.
but you are still menstruating.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes. So it's sounding to me like perhaps what we're talking about here are some hormonal changes.
Yes, most definitely.
Which, again, doesn't have anything to do with inflammation.
Okay.
You see, we often do this. We often hit upon a word, right? And then rather than actually take care of ourselves, we take care of a word.
Good point.
Right? So you called up asking me to take care of a word, and I said, no, I want to take care of you.
Thank
yeah?
you. Yeah.
Yeah. And they are different, yeah. aren't they?
They
yeah.
are. They are.
Okay,
they
so
are.
Which herbal infusions are you currently drinking?
I'm rotating nettle and comfrey.
That sounds good. And what kind of scale are you using?
It's a base scale with a vestibule where you can pour the herbs in, not metal, that you can pour the herbs in and weigh them.
Did you say not metal?
Not metal.
Or not metal?
Not nettle, yeah. M as in nettle.
Oh, okay, I thought, well, why not nettle? But you said not metal. Okay, that doesn't really matter, but okay. So you have a scale so that you can actually weigh out a full ounce of herb.
Correct.
Good. And linden, of course, is one of my favorite herbs because it is such a powerful anti-inflammatory. Oat straw is also very nourishing and healing, especially to the hormonal system.
Good.
So of the five that I use on a regular basis, nettle, comfrey, red clover, oat straw, and linden, the other three are just as useful for you as the two you're using.
Okay.
Have you tried the others and not liked them or just not gotten into them yet?
I'll tell you, I may have developed an unfortunate prejudice where oat straw and red clover are concerned because I tried an application incorporating red clover, oat straw, and jojoba oil, and my skin did not react well to it. So I was concerned about a possible internal reaction as well.
Why would one ever put those herbs on the outside of our skin?
Right. I was thinking things like cleansing, pH balance, that sort of thing. Like
pre-cleansing
oil.
Wait a second, just a second.
Yeah.
Do you understand that when applied to the human body, the word cleanse means damage?
Oh, I did not know that.
You are not a toilet to be flushed or a rug to be beaten. You're a living human being. And any time you clean or cleanse, you are damaging and destroying yourself.
Mm.
And that's true of all living systems, isn't it? Suppose you came over here to my forest and went around in the forest and picked up every leaf and every stick and every pine cone by cleansing my forest, huh?
Yeah.
What would happen to the forest then?
Forest would get very sparse. It would be less nourished, I would think.
It would die.
Wow.
So what you're saying is, I proposed to damage my skin and I was successful.
Yes. Unfortunately, that's what I'm saying, Susan. Very unfortunately, yeah.
So I do not think that you have anything at all to fear from drinking red clover or oat straw.
Wonderful. Wonderful. That's good to hear. We can make friends again then.
That sounds good to me. Also, to be really clear with you, menopause means change. If nothing was changing, it wouldn't be menopause.
Right.
It's rather like a pregnant woman saying, I'm gaining so much weight, what herbs could I use to lose weight?
Yeah, right. Yeah, that would
And we would
sense.
Have to say to her, you're pregnant, hi. You're supposed to be gaining
it's
weight.
It's a big change. It's a big change.
It's a big
so
change.
Funny because
so let me
some
ask
of the women
you this.
I talk to, oh, yes.
What herbs did you use to get through puberty?
None.
And were you successful at getting through puberty?
Yes. Yes.
Guess what? Menopause is just puberty all over again.
I like that.
And there's no more need to treat menopause than there was to treat puberty. Now, the stakes are high at both situations. As we move into puberty, we end the lengthening of our bones. So for the first 14 or 15 years of our life, our bones lengthen and we grow up because the bones get longer. For most women, by the age of 15 or 16, they're as tall as they're going to be. And for the next 15 years, the bones create mass.
Mm-hmm.
The first 15 years of our life, the bones lengthen, and for the second 15 years of our life, the bones create mass. After the age of 30 or so, we're no longer so they say, capable of creating bone mass. However, we are certainly capable of losing it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things, one of our tasks during our menopausal years is to craft our diet so that for the rest of our lives we can maintain the bone mass and the flexibility that we have.
That totally makes sense, hence the nourishing herbal infusions, for example.
Hence the nourishing herbal infusions and adding more yogurt to your diet. And for many menopausal women, it means adding meat back into the diet or adding more meat into the diet.
Mm.
Needless to say, I think that that should be antibiotic-free, hormone-free, pasture-raised meat. Happily, I can tell you that every supermarket in the United States offers such meat for sale.
Well, this might explain why a couple of women I've spoken with, a few women I've spoken with, will say, oh, menopause, no big deal. I've been a vegetarian now for about 25 years. And my change has been much more intense than some of the women I've spoken with.
Mm-hmm. Because basically you have been malnourished for 25 years.
Oh, yeah.
Now's the time to put meat back in your diet.
Malnourished because I wasn't eating meat?
Correct.
Whoa.
I'm not talking about baking for breakfast and bologna for lunch and pork chops for dinner here. I'm talking about how most of the people on this planet eat meat, which is as a condiment, a festival food. I'm not suggesting
so
that you need to eat meat on a daily basis or even a weekly basis.
Yeah, it's so hard because when
meat.
I think about eating animals, I get sad. I feel so sad.
But you don't care about plants? Plants don't count?
Well, no, no plants count. I love plants.
No,
I
you
love
don't.
Plants.
No, you don't.
I
don't. You don't love animals either. No, you don't.
No.
If you loved plants, you would be more sad about eating plants than about eating animals.
I think I have a better relationship with plants.
I don't think so. You murder them all the time. And probably without even by your leave.
Well, I debated at one time being a fruitarian, but that just was out.
That's a really good way to wind up in a wheelchair with two hip replacements.
Yeah, and I've steered away from vegan, so.
Right, so at least you missed the worst of it.
Yeah.
Still and all. And, you know, I actually eat more vegetables than most vegetarians.
I have heard you talk about eating a lot of vegetables.
We
yeah.
eat a lot of vegetables and a lot of whole grains. But the diet that is narrowed creates health that is narrowed. And it catches up with you. For some people, it takes 15 years. For others, it's 20, 25 years before it catches up with you.
It seems to have caught up with me now.
Exactly. So keep on drinking your nourishing herbal infusions and see where you can really open yourself to the fact that the only way to maintain your life is to consume the giveaway of other living beings. Whether they in animal form or plant form, we live because we eat the bodies of other beings. Humbling, isn't it?
Yes, humbling is a really, really good word to describe it. Yes, it is very.
It's one of the things that I find missing from most vegans and vegetarians is humbleness.
Yeah.
And this is why I say that they neither love plants nor animals. Because I don't see them in what my Buddhist teachers would call right relationship. Which is an incredible, humble gratefulness that other beings
are giving their forms to me to build my form. There's only one rule in nature. I eat you, and you eat me. Because when all is said and done, I'll be eaten too, won't I?
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah.
Well, that is the thing. Isn't that the thing that most vegans and vegetarians are trying to ignore? Isn't that what
well,
they're really trying to say, is that if I don't kill animals, I can live forever?
It's funny you brought that up because I actually recently, within the last few months since the change began, really, or I should say really kicked in, I just started up in bed one day because I thought to myself, I'm going to die. You know, just it wasn't that I didn't intellectually understand that, but emotionally it hit me harder than it's ever hit me. I am going to die. I am going to pass out of this world in my present form. Wow, I've been thinking much more about it, preparing a will and all of these things that come to mind that I hadn't thought before the change started.
Yes. And wouldn't we like, when we leave, to be thought of as useful instead of useless?
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
And so why are you taking animals' usefulness away and making them useless?
I just hadn't thought of animals' uses that way, I guess.
Well, that's what they're for. That's what they're raised for. That's what they're bred for. That's what they've agreed to. Or as my Tai Chi teacher says, when I eat steak, I say, thank you, cow, and the cow says, thank you. Without you, I would not have had a life.
I thought you were going to say the cow says moo. Well,
cow says, thank you. Without you, no life for me.
I will need to really pray about this.
How many animals have never lived because of you?
Yeah, I don't know the answer. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's all part of life. How we nourish ourselves is part of life. Certainly, it should all be done with respect.
With respect is very key. Yes.
But what I find as a person very much involved with plants is that people have very little respect for plants. They drive their cars on plants. They don't think about it. They rip plants out of the ground. They don't say anything about it. They buy food. They have no idea how it's been grown.
That's true. Or killed. I mean, you know.
Exactly. Or harvested. Any of that. You got it. So as we move into and through menopause, we have the possibility to expand and to become larger than we have been and to really carry that expansion into our personal lives and then out into the community, so that we begin to make connections where there weren't connections before.
Gosh, it's so amazing you're talking about this, too. You and I have spoken about Hildegard von Bingen. I mean, she really began a public life, a widespread public life, after the age of 43, interestingly
yep.
enough.
Yes.
So the expansion yes. you're describing, and that certainly mirrors my life as well, expansion happening in the 40s.
Yes.
I already took a big step. You had talked to me about eating eggs in the morning, and I've actually started doing that for the first time. I hadn't eaten eggs in a very long time. Big step.
The hens of America, thank you. And I should let you go and move on to the next caller.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Susan. Green blessings.
You're welcome.
Blessings. Thank you. Bye.
All right. We'll move on to the next caller in the 530 area code.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Susan. I'm so happy to talk to you. My name's Leah. And
what's up tonight, Leah?
I've been drinking the herbal infusions for about 3 weeks now, rotating between nettle, comfrey, and oat straw, and I've been really enjoying them. But I've noticed that I've been having, like, sluggish bowels. And I don't know if there's something else I should add or what's going on because I don't know if it's just, like, pulling, like, stuff out of me or I'm not sure what's going on. But I have been experiencing that, and I was wondering if that was common or if there's something
well,
else I should do.
First of all, what do you mean sluggish?
Sluggish, I mean...
Like a slug? That your bowels are like a slug's bowels?
It feels like it's like stuck in there. Like I'm going to the bathroom, but it's not a good elimination.
How many times a day are you having a bowel movement?
Two to three. But it's not very much. I just feel really bloated. Like, I feel bloated, and I feel like there's just, like, there's still stuff that needs to come
out. I understand, but let's take a slight detour.
Okay.
What is the biggest killer on this planet?
I don't know.
Diarrhea.
Okay.
Diarrhea kills more people on a daily basis than any other problem or disease on the planet. Diarrhea is described as having more than one bowel movement a day. Do you know anyone or have you ever read any medical literature in which a person died of constipation?
No, but it just feels different than it did before I started taking...
I am simply trying to set some parameters here. You
okay.
are way far on the side of overactive bowel.
Okay.
Your bowels are not sluggish, they are overactive. You are eliminating way too much.
Hmm.
We have large intestines and small intestines. The small intestine extracts from what we eat the nutritive value. Vitamins, minerals, proteins, fats, all those things are removed from the food and moved through the small intestine wall into the capillaries and thus into the blood system. By the time the food gets to the large intestine, the ability to extract nutrition from it ceases. So the faster that food passes through our bodies, the less nutrition we get.
Okay.
The large intestine removes the energy, or in Chinese terminology, the qi from the food. The faster the food moves through the large intestine, the less qi we get. Now, it is said in Chinese medicine that we are born with qi. We have what's called ancestral qi. So all of our ancestors have made a trust fund for us and given us this trust fund of qi. And when the trust fund is used up, we die.
Okay.
So what would a smart investor do? Would a smart investor take from the principal or live off the income?
Live off the income.
Correct. The food that we eat is our income. The faster it moves through the large intestine, the more you draw down your principal.
What do you think? It feels uncomfortable, like bloating, though. Like there's some, it's different. Like it's a different sensation than I had before I was drinking the infusions, and I feel bloated, like my stomach's more extended.
Nothing else in your life has changed.
No.
Every single other thing in your life is exactly the way it's always been.
Well, I'm eating the same. I'm living in the same place. I have the same job.
Okay.
I'm exercising the same, doing the same activities.
Then why don't you try not drinking infusions and see if that uncomfortable sensation goes away? If I think the bird singing makes the sun come up, I can kill all the birds and see if the sun still rises.
I've just been really excited about drinking them, and I just thought, well, maybe it's just going to be like a time, like time frame, like maybe my body's just getting adjusted to it, or, you know, like it's just going to take a little bit of time to adjust.
Do not think there's any connection
the
at all, and no. I think that you, from what you're saying, and only from what you're saying, and I don't know you or anything about you, but from what you're saying, this is borderline disease process here in terms of your thoughts.
Oh.
Your thoughts are
okay.
Disordered. If you're having three bowel movements a day and you tell me your bowels are sluggish, this is like a 98-pound woman looking in the mirror and saying she's fat.
Well, not very much is coming out each time. That's what I feel like, just a little bit's coming out, and like it's like a little bit comes out and the rest just stays in there.
How much whole
like
grains do you eat? How much salad do you eat?
I eat salad, I eat whole grains, I eat meat and yogurt and lots of...
Before you started drinking the infusions, you had 12-inch fully formed bowel movements once a day.
Yeah.
So let me repeat again. Stop drinking the infusions and see if it changes anything.
Okay.
don't think it will.
Okay.
But there's nothing I can say that's going to convince you. The only thing you can do is stop and see if there's a change, right?
Right. Or maybe just drink one at a time and see maybe if there's one or the other that's maybe...
Of course you drink one at a time. You haven't been drinking one at a time?
No, I have. I have been drinking one each day, like rotating.
Okay.
But eliminating one altogether.
That's what I'm suggesting.
So also, I harvested some nettles, and I put them in the dehydrator, and... I was wondering if I should just use the leaves, or if I was just using the leaves, or the stems as well. Like cut up the stems, or just
the
use
problem
the
with what's the problem with the stems? What is your problem with the stems?
I just didn't know if I should use the whole plant.
What would the problem be?
I don't know. Yes, there is none.
Well, I'm saying that to ask me this question, you must think there could be some problem. Am I wrong?
I just wasn't sure if, because on the comfrey that I bought from Frontier, it says leaves and stems have been cut and sifted. And
right.
So, right.
That's what it says in the nettle too.
Okay. So, I'm just
how does that to the nettle leaves?
What?
How do things get to the nettle leaves?
From the stem.
If there's calcium in the nettle leaves, how did it get there?
From the stem. Yep.
So, what's your problem with the stem?
That, okay, I got it. There is none.
I can't figure out any problem, but obviously you can figure out some problem.
I don't know why I thought that maybe I should just use these leaves. I think I heard something somewhere that just to use the leaves. But
problem with the stems. Are they poisonous?
So good. I don't think so.
It doesn't matter what you hear.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be able to think for yourself, yes?
Okay, right.
What's the problem with the stalks? What's the problem? If you can't even make up a problem, then there isn't a problem, is there?
No.
There are certainly plants in which the leaves are bitter and the root is sweet. There are plants in which we can eat the stalk but not the leaf. There are plants in which we can eat the root but not the leaf. But I've never heard of the plant in which we could eat the leaf but not the stalk.
Okay. Well, I just learned something new today.
Because in order to get to the leaf, it has to go through the stalk, right?
Right. All right. Well.
Okay, my dear. Anything else?
That's it.
Good.
I'm both.
Okay, call us back and let us know what happens, okay?
I will. Okay, thanks, Susan. Bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Green blessings.
Thank you.
All right, next caller. In the 570 area code.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello. I have two questions for you. One of them's kind of straightforward, and then one of them's kind of weird. The first question is, I looked on your official Facebook today, and you were posting, no, it wasn't the Facebook, it was in your e-zine that came out today, and it was talking about the wild roses, and there was a picture of a flower purporting to be a wild rose that looks exactly like this flower that is on a ton of bushes around my house that eventually bears a red fruit that my dad always called me was just a bird berry, which is code for don't eat it. And I don't know if that is actually a rose hip of a wild rose, because, I mean, it looks exactly like it. It has the notching in the center of the petal, five petals.
Yes,
it's got the
rose hip.
Jeez,
yes, it's rose,
seriously?
Rose.
I can't believe that. Sorry.
Okay, then, no, it's not.
No, no, no. I mean, I can't. What I mean is that I can't believe that my father wouldn't know it. Wow. So, like, when Yule Gibbons makes rose hip jelly.
Well, he doesn't know very much about plants if he called anything a birdberry.
Well, that's just the thing. My dad knew quite a bit about plants. My dad taught me a lot about plants, and that's why it's so shocking to me.
Why would he call something a birdberry? There's no plant called a birdberry.
Well, it's just a country colloquialism for a bird that for a berry that. It's for the birds, you know what I mean? Oh, that's for the birds, meaning it's not very good. It's not like an official designation, of course. But I had no idea, because, I mean, my dad gave me Yule Gibbons books that talk about making rose hip jelly and all of that, so I had no, I've always just avoided them, and I have so many. Okay, they look kind of like blackberry blossoms.
Which are in the rose family.
Which are in the rose family. Interesting. Now that's fascinating, and they smell so good, and I've been wondering, but I've just, you know, when something gets in your head when you're a kid, it just doesn't come out until you change it yourself, I guess. Wow, that's fascinating.
Well, I often say that much of my work is trying to undo the damage done by parents.
Yeah. Well, you got a lot of work ahead of you.
Indeed, because so many parents tell their children to be frightened of outdoors and frightened of plants.
Yeah, sure. And, you know, my dad, I mean, he taught me everything about dandelions being edible, blackberries, black raspberries, sassafras. He was always showing me things to eat, so that's why I never thought, but I'll have to tell him, give him a shock.
Please do.
I will. And I'll have a toast with butter and wild rose for breakfast tomorrow.
Yes! All right. So
okay, now here's
the
Well, I'm going to do it. Thank you for that confidence to do so. Now, my second question is kind of murky and kind of
Okay.
So I really find this wise woman tradition for healing very appealing, because it, I've always found the idea of purging and cleansing and all of that to be missing the broader point that what we should really be doing is, to take your words, nourishing the whole. And so this all makes perfect sense to me in terms of, like, diet and lifestyle, but and herbs. But what I'm wondering is, do you have any advice for how to apply the wise woman tradition of healing to, like, emotional wounds, like, say, long-standing feelings of like abandonment or isolation from your family without, I don't know, I guess, end of sentence. That's it.
Okay.
Or like herbs even for it, because I took motherwort last week and I was getting all these crazy, crazy feelings coming up of like grief and fear and all these things that I feel are kind of like in a pit in my stomach all the time. And it was like almost too much for me to even deal with. But anyway, okay.
So most of us live in an either or story. Either this or that. But life is not either or. Life is both and. Let me give you my favorite example of this. We come out of where the Tai Chi class is, and there's a short little walk along a strip of paved road to my driveway. It's a hot summer day, and I step out onto this road, and I go, whoa, ouch, 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 this is hot. We're usually done with Tai Chi at about noon, so that pavement was hot, 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 hot. And the Tai Chi teacher said, jump on my back and I'll walk you over to your driveway. So I jumped on my Tai Chi teacher's back and we walked down this short stretch of road and I leaned over to my Tai Chi teacher's right ear and I said, I love you. And then I leaned over to my Tai Chi teacher's left ear and said, I hate you. Mm. And I kept that up with every step for the whole walk. I love you. I hate you. I love you. I hate you. Who are you most likely to be killed by?
Somebody you love.
Correct. Someone you live with.
Right. Domestic abuse.
So it is a both and world, not an either or world. Can you allow yourself to feel both abandoned and cherished?
Oh.
No, you're happy you're being abandoned.
Yeah.
Gosh, your whole conception of yourself would have to change if you felt that you were cherished, wouldn't it?
It's difficult to feel that you're cherished, though, when it's like obvious injustices have happened to you and you sit there and you know them all and you recount them.
That's what I'm saying. You're very happy being abandoned. You're very happy recounting all your injustices. Enjoy
sure.
yourself. I'm being sarcastic, aren't I? Because it's not a very enjoyable activity, is it?
No. No.
All right,
I mean,
so here's your assignment. You get a blank notebook. And the name of the notebook is I Am Cherished. And I suggest that you start out by getting a beautiful notebook. Something that you would cherish, something that you would find valuable. Perhaps you even want to get a bound blank book. And I want you at least once a day to write down something that occurs to you that shows you that you are cherished. Grandmother Yewino Two Wolves said to us, the sun loves you. The sun shines on you no matter what you have done. You are cherished by the sun. Can you allow the sun to cherish you?
Well, yeah, because the sun obviously provides nourishment and health and life for me.
Well, how much time do you spend on a daily basis feeling cherished by the sun?
Probably the whole damn thing.
You spend the whole day long feeling cherished?
Oh, do you mean like consciously sitting here saying, oh, I am cherished by the sun? I mean,
that's right.
No. No, not very much, but
right?
I'm certainly aware of it.
No, you're not.
Well, I'm
aware. But you're aware
of
all these injustices.
One could have more on their brain than one thing.
It's not actually very easy. If you're focused on injustice, you are not focused on gratitude.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I'm simply suggesting you change your focus.
Right.
Or enjoy your pity party.
All right. Well, you know,
I mean, into each life, there injustice, pain, and disagreeable things happen. There is nothing
right.
that protects us against those things. Not money, not beauty, not age, not position.
Right.
Into each life, there are occurrences that are unjust.
Right.
And we can spend our lives thinking about those things, or we can say, whew, that was really hard. Certainly it was unjust for me to be awakened in my own bed, in my own home, by a policeman who had a drawn gun and had it pressed up against my head. Certainly it was an injustice when that policeman said, get some clothes on your disgusting naked body, bitch. Certainly it was an injustice when the policeman and his pals took axes to my walls, pulled up my floorboards, tore my books apart, poured all of my food in the middle of the kitchen floor, tore up my clothes. But I don't light a candle to those experiences.
Right. Yeah.
They are part of me. They are part of the injustice that I have had in my life. And they help me understand and be compassionate for the injustice in every other person's life, and therefore I am grateful for those experiences. I have participated in an interesting form of, perhaps we might call it therapy, called the PATH work, P-A-T-H, PATH work.
Mm-hmm.
The PATH work is a series of lectures by Eva Pirakos. She was the wife of John Pirakos. And John was one of the people who combined emotional work and physical work, something we kind of take for granted now. But before John Pirakos, there were very few other people talking about that. And Eva said, John, what a good job you've done to connect the body and the feelings, but you left out the most important part, the soul. And she proceeded to give hundreds of lectures about the soul. Now, for many, many years, the PATH work was by invitation only. You were invited to the PATH work, you had a guide in the PATH work, and your PATH work guide gave you the lectures as that guide saw fit in terms of your own development. And the lectures were not published, and we were not allowed to talk about it because it was felt that the general level of human development was not great enough to allow people to hear anything in these lectures other than blaming of the victim. But what these lectures have to tell us is that no one is a victim. You're not a victim of these injustices. You, in fact, have chosen them. Because it's all laid out for us before we incarnate. And we get to see the movie. And then we get to forget it.
I guess that's a concept that I've never quite fully subscribed to. Like, it sounds
interesting.
That's what
I'm saying. That's what I'm saying, that the vast majority of people only see this as blaming the victim. And I understand
oh.
that.
Oh. Oh, no, I don't believe, I'm not saying that. I think it makes sense. I'm just saying that I'm not sure that I entirely believe that, you know, I chose, I'm not saying like, oh, I would have chosen this horrible thing and it's my fault. No, I don't think that. I'm just saying that the whole idea that it's possible that I did see my all of my life prior to my incarnation, I've just never quite signed up for that particularly because, I don't know, it seems like a real leap of faith that I haven't seen enough to convince me of. Personally.
Well, the other leap of faith is to believe that you are an idiot, right? I mean, what is the other leap of... I mean, there's a leap of faith here one way or the other, yes?
Okay, hold on. Let me try and think of what you're saying. There's a leap of faith here one way or the other. So
you said,
if I...
Well, it has a leap of faith to believe that I knew what I was getting into. And I'm saying... Well, isn't it just as big a leap of faith to say I didn't know what I was getting into?
Well, I mean, it seems more scientifically plausible.
No, it seems more victimly possible.
Well, okay, what I'm telling you is I didn't know what I was getting into,
and they fooled me, and they duped me, and they tricked me, and I'm the victim. And what I'm saying is, no, you're not. You're a person of power, and you've been a person of power all along.
Right. I can totally see that, and I can see that, you know, things in my life I, you know, could have brought to myself on purpose or chosen on purpose and all of that. I'm just specifically
saying anything about purpose.
Okay.
I certainly did not say the word purpose.
Okay. Intentionally, that I could have done something intentionally, that I could have
I did not say anything about intentional.
Well, choose and intend are
choose,
sort of...
Choose, you... it all, and then you forget.
Okay.
But it's kind of like you have gone to the Cinemaplex and there are 8 movies showing. How do you choose which movie you're going to see?
Are you actually asking?
I am actually asking.
I would choose it based on what I think I would enjoy the most, on what I think I would move me the most, on what I think the person I'm with would also enjoy, and I wouldn't be the only one enjoying.
Is that a leap of faith?
No, that's rationality.
Well, that's all I'm saying right here. That you were invited to the Cineplex, and you were said, these are the movies that are showing, which one are you going to be in?
Okay.
And just like going to the movies, you made a choice. But the fact that you chose that movie doesn't mean that you made the movie.
Sure. Right.
You chose it.
Okay.
You didn't create it. You didn't script it, cast it. You said, that movie, that's the one I think I want to be in. That movie looks like a good one to me. And at the end of the movie, you get to walk out of the theater and say, wow, that was a really amazing movie. Or, I didn't like that one so much. I'm not going to choose that kind again. Have you heard of the book Heaven is Real?
No, I haven't.
It's a recent book written by a neurosurgeon who got a deadly form of meningitis that attacked his brain and shut down all higher functioning in his brain. His brain literally was not working except for the brain stem.
Uh-huh.
The dura over his brain was completely inflamed. Blood flow was hardly getting through. They actually thought even if they managed to pull him through it, and like 1 out of 10,000 people survives it, they actually thought if they managed to pull him through it that he would be a shadow of his former self. And while his brain was in this shutdown state, while his brain was not functioning at all, he had... amazing experiences just like what I'm telling you. And he, as a scientist, has come back and said, I used to dismiss these things because I thought, well, it's this part of the brain firing, or it's this part. He says, but my brain wasn't working, and I still had these experiences, and therefore I have to tell you, they are real.
Wow. What's the title of that book again?
Heaven
is Real?
Heaven is Real.
Neat. I'll look into that.
Okay. Thanks for your question. Green blessing.
Thank you for your answer. Good night.
Okay,
well, that
yes,
was a fast first hour, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was a really fast first hour, and we got another half hour, and then Anna Holub is going to be with us, and she teaches the healing power of forgiveness. How perfect for this evening. We're looking forward to talking to Anna in about half an hour, so let's see who else has a question that we can answer in that time.
Okay, yeah, there's four callers, and in the 860 area code.
Hi, Susan and Rebecca. This is Jasdeep from Connecticut.
Hi,
oh,
Jasdeep.
Hi, Jasdeep.
Hi.
I'm already
so
missing you because I know you won't be here this weekend.
Oh, I'm missing every week that goes by as all these plants keep coming out, but I am busy picking and harvesting hypericum by the quart jars full. And I have
all right. Yay for you.
Yeah, that's very uplifting in the process of harvesting even. I have a technical debacle question. As I was admiring this pomegranate solution, which turned red right away, when I put the vodka over the hypericum flowers, I then, a day or two later, checked to see the level of the vodka was covering the plant material, which it had receded a little bit, so I thought, okay, I'll pour and top it off. And in my haste, I had not defined the bottles of oil and vodka very well, so I just grabbed the oil by accident and plopped about an ounce on top of the beautiful vodka mixture. Is it ruined, is my question, or is there any salvage technique?
So you put oil into the tincture?
Yes.
It's not ruined.
Okay, good. Maybe just scoop
it off.
It's
food-grade oil, right? Like you would eat the oil, yes?
Yes, olive oil. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I don't see any problem with your eating some oil in your tincture, right?
Okay, good. That's all I really wanted to know. I wasn't going to throw it out. I'd find some, use for it, but it was so beautiful. Okay, just a little oil, an oily tincture.
Well, the other thing is, isn't the oil floating on top?
Yes, so I could siphon it.
Pour it off. Pour it off.
Okay. Good.
Pour as much of it as you can off, right?
Mm-hmm. Very good. And is that the right technique to top off the oils or the tinctures if they go down a little bit?
Yes, I often tease and say the fairies take a little sip.
Okay, very good.
As you're suggesting, better to put vodka in the tincture and oil in the oil.
Right. I'll label the bottles.
I agree with that, yes.
I'm learning something every day, including...
Labels, very important, huh? And put the label to the oil on top of the oil because it won't survive being on the side.
Right, and in a dish as well.
Yes.
Okay, I know you have callers behind me, so I want to leave room for them. Thank you. This is such a magnificent service and a generous offer of an ability to call you with all of our questions. Thank you so much, both of you.
You're welcome, Jasdeep. Mwah. Lots of love.
Mwah. Bye-bye, hug.
Jasdeep is one of the live-out apprentices this year, which is how I know that she's not coming to class this weekend, because she already got in touch and told me. And you have 2 full years to complete your live-out apprenticeship, so it's not a problem. As a matter of fact, I kind of like it when somebody misses a class or two, because that means I get to see them next year.
Yes, I have been connecting with Jazz Deep on Facebook. We're friends on there, but we follow each other and all of our herbal preparations and stuff, so it's
nice,
cool.
Very nice. Okay, who's next?
In the 775 area code.
Hello?
Hello?
Can you hear
Hello.
Me? Yes. Hi. I
Hi.
Have a question for you, Susan. Thank you. Can you hear me, though?
I have been hearing you all along.
Okay. I just haven't heard you. Okay. My question is a health issue. I have very limited energy, and I often get like a suddenly it's all gone, and sometimes I have to stay in bed just for a couple days even before I can get my energy up to be able to do normal things. And I think it's affecting my nervous system. I mean, I'm happy. I want to hear what you have. I'm just trying to tell you as much as I know. So I used to have epilepsy. So I haven't had epilepsy for well over a decade now. But it's that same kind of tiredness I used to have, not nearly as bad, but a kind of tiredness like that. And if I get really tired, I'll, like, start crying. It's sort of like a little child that runs out of energy, and then I'll start crying. And once in a while, I'll get a little wispy, kind of shaky movement on my left side if I'm laying down and ready to rest. And I want to know what I can do to build up and balance my energy so I can have a healthy life. It's been very hard to actually have a job.
I hear you. Can you tell me a little bit about what you generally eat?
I eat lots of vegetables, lots of meat, and yogurt. I think I pretty much eat your recommended diet. I tried everything else, and they were all awful. It didn't. My body got a lot better, especially the meat. So that's what I eat. I don't eat very much fruit. I don't eat sugar because it's too speedy or something for me. I need the protein, especially, is what I crave and what I feel like helps my body the most. So meat and vegetables especially.
Last time I talked to Sally Fallon, which was a few months ago, she said she had a new book coming out on broths. And if that book is out, and her name is Sally, Fallon, you might want to see if you could connect with that. As a matter of fact, I should make myself a note to give her a call and see if that book is out, and then I can carry it at the Wise Woman Bookshop. But don't wait for me. See if you can find it on your own and see if there's some broths that she has in there, because she is really quite the queen of broths. Are
okay.
you drinking nourishing herbal infusions at this point?
Not regularly, and that's what I was hoping you might be able to guide me on, because at the moment my husband and I have been traveling in our trailer, and I haven't been able to really find any way to gather or do anything, and or even places where I can buy herbs. But I just ran out of oat straw, and I love that stuff. I can tell when I drink it that there's something really valuable in there for me. So as soon as I can find some more, I'll start on again. But I haven't done it long enough. For a long enough time, I'd have to buy a really big batch or find a harvest and find a place to keep it. And with the little trailer, that's a little hard. But I want to, and I'll find a way to take whatever you
recommend.
A
pound of oat straw takes up about 4 inches by 6 inches by 8 inches.
Yep, I can do it. I'd have to find.
I think
some.
You can do that. I really do. And I buy herbs by mail. I don't generally buy them in stores because I don't want to have to pay for the store overhead.
Well,
so
I can't buy them.
When
I
when I was when I was traveling, there were people that I knew that I was going to visit. And I had a fairly good idea of at least what month I was going to visit them, if not the actual date. And I was able to order things and have them shipped to that friend's house. And then when I got there, to pick them up.
Okay.
Are you seeing any friends along the way?
I can arrange it somehow. I can figure out how to have things. If I know enough ahead of time, we haven't had a schedule where things were planned very much ahead of time.
Right. I'm not saying that it has to be planned, only that you know that sometime within the next period of time that you will be going through that area and can swing by and stop at that person's house.
Right, and have the plants shipped to their house.
And have the dried herbs shipped to their house, correct?
Oh, yeah, of course, the dried herbs shipped to their house. Okay, which
one? I rotate through 5 nourishing herbal infusions, stinging nettle, oat straw, red clover, linden, and comfrey. So a pound of each one of those herbs would weigh 5 pounds, right?
Mm-hmm.
You get a pound of each one of 5 herbs, so you have 5 pounds. Now, those herbs always come in packages. They're packed up, so you have the whole pound in a bag. I have a pound of red clover here, whole red clover blossoms, which is the bulkiest of the herbs. And this package of red clover blossoms, 3, 6, 9, is about 10 inches across, 3, 6, 9, and maybe 15 inches long and about 2 inches front to back.
Yes, that would be fine. I was wondering if there was any other herbs that would be specific for building my energy and my nervous system. And
the best herb for building your energy is nettle. The best herb for building the nervous system is oat straw.
Wow. Okay. And I still have some nettle. I'll just start on the nettle.
Good. And you have a scale so you can weigh out an ounce of it.
Well, no, I've been doing...
Then you're not making infusions.
One cup of oat straw is a pound, because check that out, but I don't know.
One cup of oat straw is an ounce? I don't know that, and I've been making infusions nightly for 25 years.
Oh, then I guess I'm not making infusions.
I weigh it out. I use a scale every single time.
Okay.
It's not a volume measurement.
Right, it's weight. Oh, okay.
It's by weight. 1 ounce by weight. So, as a matter of fact, I've never even measured how much by volume oat straw is 1 ounce. It has never even occurred to me to do that. Because it's a weight measurement, not a volume measurement. And scales are pretty small, you know.
I'll get a scale.
Wonderful. And you're letting your infusion sit for at least 4 hours?
Overnight. I always let them sit overnight.
Excellent. Excellent.
Okay. And you think those are, because I know those are the same as 5. And if that's all I need, I can take them. I was just wondering.
Those would be excellent if you were in a more settled place. I would encourage you to seek out someone who does cranial sacral adjustments.
Okay.
So, again, possibly in this place that we're imagining where there's some friend, maybe they live in a city where there's somebody who does cranial sacral work, and this friend could find a cranial sacral practitioner for you so that when you drop by that town, maybe you'd even give them a day or two notice and you could get an appointment.
Okay, I have had cranial sacral work.
And what did you think of it? Was it helpful for you?
Well, I had it long time ago. The first time I had it was when I was still epileptic, and it actually brought on a seizure. When I've had it since the epilepsy's been gone, it's been hard to notice. I think that it's valuable. I can't tell. I know something's going on in there. That's all I know. I can't tell.
That sounds good. The other possibility, if for some reason you don't feel comfortable with the cranial sacral, is acupuncture. Now,
yes, acupuncture.
Cranial sacral work is pretty much the same. Certainly there's going to be individual differences from practitioners, whereas I cannot give you that assurance with acupuncture. I know that if you find a cranial sacral therapist, that they will be doing pretty much what we expect them to do. I can't say the same about acupuncture. You can find anyone from native-born Chinese now in the United States speaking no English, doing acupuncture as they would on a Chinese person, to a young person in their 20s who's just graduated from a year-long course for traditional Chinese medicine and had 500 herbs stuffed into their heads and 300 some odd points, and they're doing acupuncture and everything in between.
Mm-hmm.
And especially in your situation where you're not in a town and so you can't figure out for yourself from referrals who would be the best, it's one of the reasons why I picked cranial sacral work rather than acupuncture.
Oh, I understand. Okay. And how about tinctures? Because tinctures are, I wonder if they would help me as well.
What would you want a tincture to do?
Same thing I'd want the infusions to do. I just want to...
Tinctures don't do that.
Well, I guess I'm saying I think that they all will help bring me health.
Okay, if we take 1 ounce of dried nettle and brew it into 1 quart of nettle infusion, that 1 ounce of dried nettle, when it was fresh, was 4 ounces of fresh nettle. If we take 4 ounces of fresh nettle and tincture it, we will make a quart of tincture. So a quart of tincture or a quart of infusion, about the same.
Okay.
Except, are you going to drink a quart of tincture a day?
Does anyone?
No. So there's 4 cups in that quart.
Right.
So let's say for saying that there's 200 milligrams of calcium in a cup of nettle infusion. There's usually more, but let's say 200 because it's an easy number to divide. So that means there's 800 in a quart. So there's 800 milligrams of calcium in our quart of tincture. How many per cup? 200 milligrams per cup. That cup is 8 ounces. Usually a dosage bottle of tincture is a 1 ounce bottle.
Mm-hmm. Why do people take tincture?
So now we've got 200 divided by 8. That's 25. So in a 1 ounce bottle of nettle tincture, there's 25 milligrams of calcium. There are 40 dropperfuls of tincture. That means each dropperful of tincture contains 0.5 milligram of calcium.
Not much.
Is it going to do for you what the infusion will do for you? No. We make tinctures from plants that are poisonous so that we can take tiny amounts of the poison.
Really, and that's the only reason?
That's the primary reason, yes. The caller just before you, Jasdeep, was asking about her Hypericum tincture, her St. Joan's wort tincture. And St.
Right.
Joan's wort, when it is dried and brewed into a tea, the predominant alkaloid is an alkaloid that causes sun sensitivity. Whereas when it is tinctured fresh or made into an oil, the opposite happens. It prevents sun sensitivity.
Right. That's fantastic.
So, yes, we would say that there is a certain poison in that plant that comes out when we brew it in water that we don't want, and so we make a tincture of it instead. Poke root, if you were to actually make a tea of it, would probably put you in the hospital because it can cause severe vomiting. So we make a tincture of poke root, and then we take that in one drop doses so that we get just enough of the poison to have an effect, but not so much that we get sick.
Okay. Is motherwort a poisonous herb if it's not taken as a tincture?
Have you ever tasted it as a tea?
No.
It's so bitter that most people spit it out at the first sip.
Okay.
What does it mean when a plant is bitter? Poison, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Wonderful. That you answered my question. I understand a lot more now about when there are tinctures and when there is infusions. And
exactly.
An infusion feels much better to take anyhow. I feel a lot closer to the plant somehow. I feel like drinking it. I'm like eating.
Wonderful.
Taking the drop. Okay.
Yeah.
I thought maybe there was something special for even another plant for my nerve system or build the energy. And I know I'm going to need to be patient, but is there anything else I can do to so I can be able to hold a job and have
you could drink coffee
for a day?
You could drink coffee.
I can't drink. I get the shakes. I've tried drinking coffee.
Well, isn't that basically what you're asking me? Is there some stimulant I can take?
No, I'm asking for some way to have
We just said balance. That nourishment comes in infusions, yes?
Yes.
And so the only thing we could get from a tincture would be stimulus.
Right?
Coffee is somewhat poisonous. It's bitter. Most people have to put sugar in it to drink it. And we don't make an infusion out of it. It would be undrinkable if we used an ounce of coffee to a quart of water and brewed it for 10 hours. So I think there are two more callers. And I only have 10 minutes for them, so I hope that this works for you and invite you to call back if it doesn't and you need to talk more. Green blessings and good night.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, next caller in the 626 area code.
And, this is Mandy Lou.
Hi, Randy.
Hi. I just joined your $11 a month program. I found out about you like a few months ago, but I just recently got an email and you said that you would send the chapters on nettles, how to dry them, how to store them, and that seems something that like I want, so I joined the program, but I haven't received any chapters yet, and I'm thinking, like, maybe that is not the level I should join. Maybe it's a higher level to get the chapters sent to me?
I think that you misunderstand.
Okay.
Nothing is sent to you.
Email.
Nothing is sent to you.
Oh, okay.
Nothing is sent to you. There is a website called wisewomanmentor.com.
Uh-huh.
when you join the mentorship program at any level, you have access to all of the information at that site.
Okay.
At wisewomanmentor.com, the first thing that's there is the e-zine. Is the e-zine continues to be free for everyone. Anyone can go to Wise Woman Mentor and can click on the e-zine every week and can read all of the information in the e-zine and click through to the recipes and everything that's part of that e-zine.
Yes. Okay.
In addition to that, behind there is a big website with articles and photographs and MP3 files and all kinds of things there at wisewomanmentor.com.
Okay.
And once you're a mentored student, you have access to all of that behind-the-scenes information, but we don't send it to you.
Oh, okay. So I just have to look at and get the chapter, get the information on how to dry nettles, how to...
Correct.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. Yes. And
you
and
are
I
welcome.
Have...
Green blessings.
Oh, well, Susan. Hello.
Yeah.
I want
Hello?
To ask you. Yes. I want to buy some nettles. I am in California, Los Angeles. Where is a web? Where is a company? I do you think there's
if you
a difference
go to my,
between
if
wild
you go
farm?
To my main website, SusanWeed.com,
okay.
I think you will see some places where you can click through to people who sell herbs.
Okay, yes. And I know you have another...
So in all of my books, every one of my books has a list with the website, the address, and the phone number of the main people selling herbs in the United States.
Okay.
So you, in any one of my books, you can also find... that information, because I think it's important information. So in addition to my website, you should also be able to find it in my books.
Okay.
All right.
Do you think there's a difference between wild-crafted nettles versus, like, organic-grown nettles?
What I would suggest is that you get both and decide for yourself if they're different.
Okay, I'll do that.
In my most recent book down there, those sources for herbs are on page 366. They include Avena Botanicals, Blessed Herbs, Catskill Mountain Herbs, Frontier Herbs, Herb Farm, Herbalist Alchemist, Mountain Rose, Pacific Botanicals, and Red Moon Herbs. So those are my 9 favorite places.
Okay.
There is one more caller, and we have only 6 minutes, so we're going to go to that caller. Thank you for asking, and I look forward to our continued relationship as a mentored student.
All right, and the 516 area code?
Yes, thank you so much, Susan. This is Joyce. I had met you up in Woodstock at the bookshop. I took one of your classes, and it was wonderful. I have the endometrial cancer that had spread to the omentum, and I'm doing the chemotherapy like we spoke about. And I was fine until the third treatment, and then they ran it, instead of 6 hours, they brought it down to 4.5. And since then, I am really having a problem with the nausea. And the area where I've had all the surgeries looks so angry now and so red, and the bone pain has been really, really very significant now. But it's really more what seems to bother me is the nausea as far as what foods to eat, which infusions to do for this.
So let me ask you this. What are you taking to protect your liver before the chemotherapy?
The only thing I was using was mistletoe. I don't know if that's liver protective, and I
no, it is not at all hepatoprotective.
Okay.
So
no, I'm not doing anything.
It's critically important when you're doing chemotherapy to take something to protect your liver before the chemotherapy. Milk thistle seed tincture is the classic thing to take. Not only does taking something to improve the functioning of your liver increase the effectiveness of the chemotherapy, it allows you to get a larger dose. it's sometimes hard to kind of follow along with what's going on with chemotherapy, but what the doctors are doing is looking at your liver enzymes. And usually, I don't know in your specific case, but in general, they adjust the dose downward throughout the sessions of chemotherapy if it appears that the liver is not being able to tolerate it. So if they are giving less chemotherapy or for a shorter amount of time, that would strongly indicate that your liver is not being tolerant of this. And I know that when my mother was doing chemotherapy, and I said to the doctor, she seems fine when she's taking the chemotherapy because she was taking a daily oral dose for 3 weeks, and then she was off for a week. I said, but the week she's off, things are just awful. Couldn't she just do it all the time? And the doctor said, no, actually, she's awful all that time, but the chemotherapy is covering it up. And we can't let that awful go on. And this frequently happens, that as the dose gets lower in the chemotherapy, the symptoms that the chemotherapy has been causing all along become more pronounced. It wouldn't seem to be that way, and it took me a long time to really understand what was going on. So
well, I'm
by
sorry,
strengthening
this time they gave me
liver,
the regular dose. I'm sorry, this time they gave
they
me the full
dose. They gave you the regular
again.
Dose. They gave it to you faster?
They gave it to me faster, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I understand, but it was actually the regular dose.
Regular dose, yes. I'm sorry.
Good.
Yes.
I am glad that they were able to do that. Right. So we can still protect your liver so that they can keep on giving you the regular dose.
Okay.
Okay. And are you using slippery elm at all?
No. Okay.
You can find a YouTube of me making slippery elm balls, and you can also find a precious YouTube of my granddaughter making slippery elm balls.
Okay.
For her 5th birthday, we took her to that big, wonderful amusement park down in Florida. And the first night we were there, her dad turned green from something he ate. And I said, ooh, you need slippery elm. Because he really looked like he was going to chuck. And my granddaughter said, I want some slippery elm, too. And I said, of course you can have some. However, when I opened my little travel box of slippery elm, oh, alas, I discovered I had only one slippery elm ball with me. And so I said, well, gee, it has to go to your dad. And she said, no, 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 I'm the birthday girl. I get it. And I said, oh, no, no, no. Look at your dad. He's green. He gets it. And, of course, we had quite the fight. And her dad got it. And so when we got home, she said, I am making slippery elm balls so that when we travel, I can have my own slippery elm ball. And she had her mom get out the camera, and she videotaped her. And it's right there at YouTube, Monica Jean, 5 years old, making slippery elm balls, telling you how to do it and how to use them.
Okay, that's wonderful. Absolutely wonderful.
Or you can find me, you know, the second best doing it as well.
Okay, okay.
And slippery elm is nutritive, and so is honey.
Okay.
And not only does it quell the nausea, but it heals the intestines. And, of course, the intestines can be a little hard hit by chemotherapy because at this point we don't have a lot of really specific chemotherapies. What we have are agents that kill rapidly reproducing cells because cancer cells are the youngest, strongest, fastest, actually healthiest cells in our body, strangely enough. And the cells, the next fastest moving cells in the body are the cells that line the gut. And then after that, the hair follicles. So usually chemotherapy, because it targets fast replicating cells, also destroys a lot of the gut lining and the hair follicles while you're taking it.
Right.
And slippery elm is a superb healer to the gut.
Okay, and it will help even up further where they took, like I had a golf ball size by on the omentum that they took. So that whole area is just so inflamed.
Yes.
The slippery elm, okay.
Yes, slippery elm, right. And then which infusions are you drinking now?
Now I stopped the infusion since I started with the nausea. I didn't know what to do. That's why I'm calling tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I was using the nettle before and for also for the nerves, which, you know, basically I've been really well with, except during the night. I was using the oat straw. I was doing the oat straw infusion. But now I just didn't know what to do as far as which ones to use.
And then also I want to say, I know that you don't have breast cancer. I truly understand that. However, my book on breast cancer goes into detail on all of these side effects.
Perfect. Okay, perfect.
Right, so okay, it talks about chemotherapy and what to do before chemotherapy. It talks about surgery and what to do before surgery so that we have, right, there's an entire chapter on nausea, vomiting, and appetite loss.
Okay. Okay, so right. What does that
offer? And my favorite remedy for rapid relief of nausea is plain yogurt by the spoonful. Slippery elm bark eases and heals all digestive disturbances. Liver protective herbs help reduce or eliminate nausea. So those are the three things that we've talked about so far this evening, and they're right there in the book, along with a lot of other things, including information about marijuana.
Okay.
And I'm sure that you know and all of the listeners know that one of the best medical uses of marijuana is to prevent nausea and vomiting during the application of chemotherapy. May all states legalize this wonderful plant. And with that, I must say green blessings.
Thank you so much.
Hello.
Thank you.
To Anna Holub. Anna Holub teaches the healing power of forgiveness as a counselor, author, poet, and peace educator. In fact, she holds a bachelor's degree in peace studies and a master's degree in dispute resolution. She's also a certified domestic violence counselor and a radical forgiveness coach. Anna Holub has been deeply inspired by her daily study of A Course in Miracles, by her meditation practice, and by her yoga. Over the past 20 years, she has worked with everybody, women, men, teens, couples, government, prison, inmates, at-risk families, nonprofits, businesses, schools, you, me, and Anna's most recent book is called Forgive and Be Free, a step-by-step guide to release, healing, and higher consciousness. Welcome to the show, Anna Holub.
Thank you so much, Susan Weed. That was the most entertaining list of who I am and what I'm about that I've ever heard. Just the way you read it. Pretty funny.
Well, gosh, I read it from your printed material.
I know, but I mean your voice and how you did it. Thank you.
You are so welcome. Well, you know, I think that it's, I don't know if you've gotten to hear any of the show tonight, but we had actually several callers touching this issue. And I think that the work that you are doing is some of the most critically important work on the planet right now. So how did you get into doing this?
Well, thank you, Susan, for recognizing the importance of the forgiveness work, because I really agree with you. That's why I'm so passionate about it. And I got into it, I think, from several different angles. One was I was studying peace education. I feel that I am a peace activist. I keep looking around the world going, how can I be more peaceful? How can we as a planetary species be more peaceful? So I had a career interest in, you know, this is what I'm about. I want to share peace in the world. Also, of course, I had my own personal pain and sorrow that I was walking around with, like most everybody. And so I went and studied all about peace education, and I was doing mediation and communication skills, and that was great. And yet it wasn't going as deep as I wanted to go. And then I discovered that there is a way to have a spiritual path that includes this idea of forgiveness as a real fundamental way of walking through life. And I started to apply it to my own life. And in my book, Forgive and Be Free, I have several stories about me and my life. And the biggest one is about my mother, who had mental illness. She was going up and down and up and down a lot throughout my life. And when I was pregnant with my first child, I was 8 months pregnant, and she took her life.
And I was very young, and I wasn't married, and I was just devastated. So when I started years later using this possibility of forgiveness within my own life to heal some of that, all of it, actually, it was so profound for me that I realized, okay, this is the kind of peace activism I want to be doing. So it's really a personal thing for me, but it's also what I can envision as a planetary healer. And when I talk about forgiveness, I'm not talking about the traditional model, and so we might want to talk about that at some point here.
Yes, tell us about that. What do you mean by forgiveness?
Yeah, I mean, there are ways to think about it, and it's important to define our terms because really it's a loaded word. There's a lot there, and sometimes we can have kind of an intense reaction to it. Oh, I don't want to forgive because I'm still angry, or I haven't gotten an apology yet, and so I'm going to not forgive, or that person's too awful, I can't forgive, or I just don't know how. But that is all predicated on the traditional model that we were taught when we were kids, which really goes something like this. Well, we should forgive because nice people do that. And really, if you can forgive somebody who did something to you, then you're a more elevated human being, and we really should do it. And then somehow when we let go, we're going to feel peace, and so it's beneficial, which it is. But we really just need to let bygones be bygones. Some people talk about forgive and forget. And it's just sort of this traditional way of looking at it, but there's no map. There's no real description of, well, how am I going to do this thing? And a lot of times we may have thought, oh, yeah, I forgave that. I let it go. And yet then we realize years later, oh, my gosh, it's still with me. I thought I forgave, but I didn't. So some other problems with the traditional model is that a lot of times in order to forgive someone, we make up a story about them like, oh, well, you know, that person had a terrible childhood, or that person was drunk and didn't really know what they were saying. So we start making excuses for the other person, which actually does not respect them as a soul. So this form of forgiveness that I'm teaching has its roots in Course in Miracles and radical forgiveness. One of my mentors is Colin Tipping, who's a wonderful teacher. Wrote a book called Radical Forgiveness and other books he's written. And also Ho'oponopono is very connected here also. And it looks, and we look at the world from an expanded viewpoint, where really this forgiveness is about, where am I not at peace? And what's it going to take for me to unlayer my pain and sorrow and fear so that I can feel the peace of spirit, however we want to define that, you know, our higher power. So yes, we might start out with something awful that happened. We usually do. But it's not so much, oh, I'm going to forgive that other person for that thing that happened. It's more, how am I going to let go and lay down my burdens so that I can feel the clarity and the peace and the joy of my spirit that gives me life and take away any barriers that I have. So it's really quite different.
Yes. So on one hand, we are not really in relationship with the person, and we're forgiving them kind of from a distance and in a way slamming the door on a relationship, which is most people call forgiveness, but it doesn't really nourish us. It doesn't really feed us. It doesn't really give to that part of us that needs to be fed. Whereas what you're proposing leads us deeper into the relationship and to an act of forgiveness that has to do with the only person we can ever really forgive, which is ourselves.
Yeah, well, the self-forgiveness place inside of us is the deepest spot that I've found. because yes, we can forgive other people and, you know, go through all those terrible things that might have happened and release the pain and suffering about that. And then at the end of the day, it's really, how have I not loved myself and accepted myself and the things that I've done? How much shame am I walking around with moment to moment that gets in the way of my direct experience of the love of God, of Spirit? So in this expanded way of looking at it, every single person is recognized as the flame of Spirit that they are. And we don't have equal talents. We don't have equal everything in the outer way in which we live our lives. But inside, at the very deepest level, we are equal in our dignity and love from where and how we were created. So we need to go all the way past all those layers and all that pain and suffering, learn how to let go of it, in order to be able to touch the place where we are indescribably, gracefully, innocently perfect. And in addition to that, this forgiveness model helps us to say, all right, what are the lessons here? What am I going to learn from this as a soul, as well as a human? You know, this temporary time that we're here, you're called Susan and I'm called Anna, it's temporary, right? We come and we go. And yet there's an eternal part of us that really wants to learn some deep things. So this forgiveness process helps us to get so honest with, all right, well, what is this thing, you know, that may have been so difficult, whatever the forgiveness moment, you know, that the crime that happened before the forgiveness moment, be it with myself or someone else, how is that really something that has some kind of treasure within it that I can learn? And once we learn those things, we can really relax. And then we realize, ah, that's the kind of peace I want to be walking through life with.
Well, that certainly makes my heart smile.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And, you know, I have done, like you, a lot of work with people, some of whom had very distressful things happen to them. Mm. I myself have been in situations that gave me post-traumatic shock twice.
Mm.
And so I really understand from a deep personal level how we get, how something seemingly innocent to someone else can trigger a massive reaction in my body.
Mm-hmm.
Things that were even a little bit incidental to what was going on somehow have been, my memory has fixated on them. The angle of the light. Right, so that I'm suddenly in a place where the light is coming in at that angle, my body will react as though the whole stressful thing is happening again. And I have found for myself that just talking about forgiveness does nothing.
So what does work?
There's something that has to go on within me that you are talking about right here. There's something that has to go on within the person. That will never change what happened to us. That will always be the same. But it will change our attitude about what happened.
Right. And I do say, I want everyone who's listening to know that I will never say to you, you should forgive this thing, whatever happened. I will say, when you're ready, this is an option for you that will bring you peace. So everybody comes to this in our own timing when we're ready. And it's true, it's not just talking about it. That's philosophizing and that's somewhat entertaining to our minds, but it's not going to move the energy on a soul level that we're really craving. So in my book, Forgive and Be Free, it's a step-by-step guidance for how to not only tune into the emotion and the memory, but where is it in the body? what are we thinking about? What are we recycling in our thoughts over and over again? We just get very, very honest with the whole situation. I always start with prayer, and I encourage people to start with prayer, meaning however that works for you. It can be an intention if you don't feel comfortable with the word prayer. But set the space so that you feel like you can really drop into having support that's bigger than just your little individual unit self. Because if we try to heal and we think we're just alone and it's just me against the world and I'm trying to heal, it will not work. We need to connect to the bigger glory of life itself, and that's going to really help us. So that's the first step. The second step is to get very, very honest with what really, truly is going on. Like you were mentioning, you could see that if the angle of the light was a certain way, your body would react. So your body is telling you very, very important information. Our bodies are reservoirs. They're reservoirs for all of our talents and all of our goodness, and also for our fear and our shame and our sorrow. So we want to be able to slow down and really listen and find out, what is this that's bothering me so much? And then there are steps that I describe in the book how, and I also do sessions with people to guide through this process of how to unwind this constricted spot. It's basically a knot, and it's all knotted up. And all we need to do is breathe and ask for help and unwind very gently that spot and find out what is the wisdom that's buried. There's good stuff in there, but it's down inside, and we have to be compassionate with ourselves and gentle enough and ask for help so that we can unwind the spot and get its wisdom. So that's the laying down of the burden, which is a very, very sacred thing to do. And we get help from beyond just our little self, you know, our smallness. We get help from the big essence of life. And then after that, all this light and love and wisdom and learning happens. We go, oh, my gosh, I see now. And I can relax and I can find peace in this situation. I'm not saying that the situation wasn't awful. It was. It probably, you know, could be very, very horrible. I'm not pretending it wasn't. But I am saying that when you're ready, there is a way to experience some healing. And it's actually very simple, and it's not hard to do.
And your book, Forgive and Be Free, is a step-by-step guide for doing this work at your own pace with compassion for yourself. I think that book is available at annaholub.com. Is that true?
It is available at my website, and it's Anna, A-N-A-H-O-L-U-B.com. That's A-N-A-H-O-L-U-B, the B like brother.com. It's also available at your independent bookseller. I definitely support people to go to independent bookshops when you can and request the book, because that will support your local bookseller. And if you want to get it on a Kindle or a Nook, it's available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. So, yes, this book I wrote for people to either do this process by themselves or with a trusted friend or with a counselor. And I'm also available to do sessions. I work on the phone. I work with people all over the world.
All right. So, listeners, you are listening to Susan Weed talking with Anna Holub, and her book, Forgive and Be Free, a Step-by-Step Guide, is available at her website and at your independent bookseller. What else is available at your website? If someone wants to work personally with you, can they find out information about that at your website?
They can. And at this point, I'm still able to give a free consultation to everybody that calls. If you are interested in doing this work, what I feel is that you should be able to call and talk to me and find out if it's the right thing for you. So I will spend about 15 minutes on the phone with you, just chatting, seeing what you need. You can ask me questions. You can tune in with me. We can connect together, and then you can decide, is this right for me? So check it out on my website. I also have a CD that I made with two guided meditations on forgiveness. Some people they love auditory learning, and it's kind of nice to have if you're up in the middle of the night and something's really bothering you. You can just put the CD on, and it will guide you through this process. It has beautiful music behind it. And there are two meditations on the CD also available at my website.
Oh, that's so helpful. You know, as a matter of fact, I would say that it is one of the best side effects of this blog talk show is the great number of women now who walk up to me and say, I love your blog talk show. I just put it on my little electronic device, and I lay in bed and listen, and I say, look at how many women's beds I've gotten into because of this show.
It's a very sexy thing.
And there you are in bed with them with your meditation late at night. Hey,
sounds good to me.
Oh, yeah,
any old time. Yep. And I made the CD and also the book so that there are low-cost options, because I know not everybody has money to do sessions all the time. If you want to do session, it is incredibly powerful. I very much support you to call me and check it out. If you want to get the book and or the CD, they're very good tools for you to say, all right, how do I do this forgiveness process? How can I lighten these burdens that I'm carrying around and let them go? This is the gift for you.
I have had people say to me, well, I'd be willing to forgive them if only they'd apologize.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I talk about that every time. It's in the book, too, actually. And every time I give a workshop, I always talk about this because it's so embedded in our idea of forgiveness is that there should be an apology. Well, if you apologize, then, okay, that opens the door to me maybe forgiving. But there are some problems with that. There are quite a few problems with that. If we're waiting for an apology,
The first problem is it keeps us in the victim role.
Exactly. We're waiting for somebody else. We've given our power away. Somebody else has to make a move. And we could wait our whole lives. We could wait and never get what we want. And meanwhile, we haven't done the inner work that's going to help us feel free. So, yeah, if you want to find your own inner power and your own connection to God, you can't be waiting around for somebody else to do something, because you might not get it, or even if you get it, you might not like it, might not be good enough. The other person may be waiting for you to apologize, so there could be a standoff you don't even know is there. Or maybe the person has passed on or is in another country or is not reachable. So this is why apology is beautiful, and it's a wonderful thing, especially when it's done well and it's sincere. And it's a great communication tool. I completely support it. However, waiting around for an apology is really going to mess you up if you're wanting to do the direct spiritual empowering work that forgiveness offers.
Yes, it is not about tit for tat. It's about a whole other level of engagement.
Yeah. Yeah. And once we do the forgiveness work, we may or we may not decide that we would like to be around the person, if it's about another person. If it's about ourselves, then we're all going to be with ourselves every day, every moment. But if it's about someone else, I'm certainly not suggesting that you should then be that person's best friend, because it may not be appropriate. It may not even be safe to be around that person. But you can still do the work so that you are not feeling so tremendously burdened by any fear or any sorrow or any shame or any jealousy. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff that comes up within our forgiveness path. And it's all about clearing it and being compassionate with all that stuff and admitting that it's here and it's okay. We give it to Spirit for blessing and to uplift it.
So the work that I did with Elizabeth Kubler-Ross and the work that we were doing with other people, because I was helping her in a way with the other people, was about forgiveness, but the path of that forgiveness was through anger.
Mm-hmm. So in other words, you hit the anger first, right?
Yes.
There's a layer of anger that happens first, yeah.
That many of these people were in denial about their anger.
Mm-hmm.
That they felt victimized, they felt bad, they felt pain, they felt heavy, they felt all these things. But what they didn't get was that they felt angry.
Yeah, thank you for mentioning that, because I actually didn't mention it. But it is an important part of the whole forgiveness process because of what happened before that, which is whatever crime occurred, you know, in our minds, there's a crime. Something wrong happened, right? And
yes.
Often
and I need
anger.
To let you know that we have only 60 more seconds before we're cut off.
Okay. Okay, great. Well, anyway, this is a great
more
way
time,
to
let's
work.
Tell the listeners. ANAHOLUB.com is the place to go. And what's that last thought you want to leave them with?
Just that forgiveness is an excellent path for freedom and for feeling real joy in your life. So I hope you will check it out.
Ah, beautiful words. Thank you, Anna Holab. Thank you for creating the path of forgiveness for all of us to follow. Green blessings, everyone. Thank you for helping
me
reweave the cloak of the ancients.